Morning, today's Daf and Erchin is Chaf Aleph. We're on Chaf Amud Beis. Picking up from a Mishnah that we saw yesterday in Chaf Amud Beis, Mishnah makes what is generally a classic distinction between saying the word Zev versus Alai. The person says the word Zev, so what he means to say is that this item is going to be Kadosh, but I myself have no personal liability. If something were to happen to this item, so I am off the hook. There's simply no recourse. On the other hand, when the person says the word Alai, so that is generally what we refer to in halacha as a neder, where the person is making an obligation with personal liability. And so that means to say that if anything were to happen to this item that he was makdish, so then he would be on the hook to make sure that the value of that item be brought to the base of Mikdash. So that is generally what we know. We see that throughout Shas. A somewhat more nuanced discussion that we had in yesterday's daf, and that's regarding the following. If you take a look back at the Mishnah, I'm going to just start right back at the Mishnah. Shor zeh ola. If the shor is an ola, this shor is an ola, bayit zeh karban, or this house is a karban, umeis ha-shor v'nafal ha-bayis patam l'shalim. So upon the death of the animal or upon the collapse of the house, so you will be exempt from having to pay. So this is pretty much what we would have expected and under the circumstances where you say the word zeh, because you said the word zeh, so there's no personal liability. On the other hand, the contrasting case, shor ze alai ola, by ze alai karban, mesa shor v'nafal ba'is chayev l'shalem. In the scenario in which you say that this shor is going to be upon me, we're using the word alai, a karban ola, or same thing with the house, we're using the word alai. So in the event that something happens to either the animal or the house, you are obligated to pay. And so the simplest reading of the Mishnah is that the difference between the two cases is the difference between saying the word zeh versus alai. However, if you look carefully at the Mishnah once again, you will see in the second case of the Mishnah, it is somewhat confusing because the statement as it reads in the Mishnah is shor zeh alai ola. So the truth of the matter is that the construct of the sentence is that it has both components. It has both the word zeh and it has the word alai. How do I know that we're focusing on the word alai? Maybe we should be focusing on the word zeh. May zeh meaning what you're trying to say is that this animal is going to have kedusha, but I have no personal liability. But on the other hand, you did say the word alai, which means upon me, which means that you're taking personal liability. So the truth of the matter is that the Mishnah itself is a little bit confusing, and we look for clarification with the Gemara. Now, the Gemara's right now objective is not to clarify the Mishnah. The Gemara's objective right now is to state a halacha by Rav Chiya bar Rav, but based on the statement that he's going to give, which is going to allow us to go back to the Mishnah and reflect upon the Mishnah. Amar Rav Chiya bar Rav lo shanu ala damar demeshur ze alai, ola. Rav Chiya bar Rav says that in order for there to be personal liability, you must add the word demay. And now is the sentence that reads as follows. The value of this ox is going to be upon me. So by adding the word demay, so here's basically what you're saying. This ox over here is just a representation. The ox over here is not really what I'm interested in bringing. What I'm interested in bringing is demay shore, the value of this ox. And it's going to be a lie. Now, obviously, the value can be represented by the ox itself. I mean, the ox is right here. But what I take upon myself is demeshur alai. The value of this ox is going to be upon me. So that means to say that I'm going to be financially responsible for its value. So if for whatever reason this ox doesn't go, so I'm going to bring a replacement. And really what he's saying is, and the Gemara spells it out, we don't have to guess. Ava amar shur ze alai ola kevin da amar zeh umei seinu chai b'achriyuso. If the person says, without the word demay, just simply the sentence structured of shor zeh alai, so that means that does not include personal liability, and he's not obligated to pay for its value in the event that something happens to it. Rather, under those circumstances, something happens to the animal, he's going to be off the hook. And now he did say the word alai, but he also said the word zeh. The critical word that is zeh, which means this animal, alai, how do we understand that? Again, the Gemara spells it out. Alai lahavio kamar. When he says the word alai, what he really means is that I'm telling you the only thing I'm taking responsibility is that I'm going to bring it up to the Mizbeach. But the animal itself, I take upon myself no responsibility, and that was clearly articulated with the word zeh. Okay. And so now, according to Rav Chiya bar Rav, what that means is that by saying the word shor zeh alai, that's not personal liability, that's not a chrayus, and if something happens to it, he's not going to have to make good on it. Only when he adds the words demay shor zeh alai. Now, obviously, what you could do is you could look back at the Mishnah and you can ask a simple question. That's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, Shur ze alai, ola, so then you are chai b'achriyusa, you're chai v'shalim, in the event that something happens to it. What is he going to do with the Mishnah? And you have to say, and the Gemara is going to make this point clear, but I'm just saying it right now, and what you're going to have to say is that when the Mishnah is talking about a case where he said the word demei. I know the Mishnah doesn't use the word demei, and the Mishnah doesn't include it, but you're going to have to say that in order to defend his position. Meisvei. Now, the Gemara is going to challenge based on another Braisa, and basically this other Braisa is going to be making essentially the same point that we saw back in our Mishnah. Shor ze'ola ha-shor hektesh. So if the person's sentences is that this shore is an ola, so he just simply says the word zeh. The shore belongs to Hekdesh, Shemal and Bo, it's subject to Me'ilo, Meso Nigna, Venuchai Bachriuso. Upon the death or if the animal's stolen, he doesn't have any personal liability, he said the word zeh. However, shore zeh alai ola, by adding the word alai in the sentence, Hashor Hekdesh, Shemal and Bo. So now the shore belongs to Hekdesh, it's subject to Me'ilo, Meso Nigna, Chai Bachriuso. And if it dies or if it's stolen, he's going to be personally liable for it. This Bryce over here clearly is of the position that by adding the word alai and just the word alai, so that brings upon yourself personal liability. This obviously goes against the opinion of Chiya Bar Rav. Now the Gemara notes, so did our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Mi alima mi masnisen. So is it any worse than our Mishnah? Meaning, you're right, the question from the Bryce is a question. But on the other hand, so is our Mishnah. And what do we do in our Mishnah? De ukimna de kamer demei. So in the Mishnah, we suggested that you have to add the word demei. Now, I know the Gemara never went through that step, but we have to assume that. So hachinami de kamer demei. So the same thing over here, where you added the word demei, and only under those circumstances is there going to be personal liability. Now, the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. At this point in time, it's difficult to understand why. V'hamid is sefer de kamer demei, reshid lo kamer demei. There's more to the Braisa coming up. And then the next portion of the Braisa, it actually uses the word demei. So by simple contrast, if the next part of the Braisa adds the word demei, that means that the previous Braisa clearly did not have the word demei. And so this defense of Chiya Bar Rav is not going to work out on the Braisa. In the Mishnah, you want to insert the word demei, have at it. But in the Braisa, clearly by contrast, you cannot add the word demei. Now what is the end of the Braisa? The Gemara introduces us. Diktani Seifa. Demei Shor Ola. So if a person says the value of the shore is an ola, hashor chulin. What does he mean by that? Think about the sentence structure. Demei shore ola. The value of the shore is an ola. So if you wanted this ox to be an ola, what you would have said is this ox is an ola. That's what you would have said. By virtue of the fact that you said demei shore ola, what you effectively are saying is as follows. I want to give the value of this animal as a carbon ola. This animal just simply is going to represent some sort of guarantee towards the value. But it's really the value of this animal. So, in fact, the animal doesn't even belong to Hektish as of yet. Chulin. So the animal is chulin. Because, again, I'm not being Maktish the animal. I'm just being, what I'm committing myself to is the value of this animal. Animal alambo, the animal is not subject to Me'ila. I mean, obviously, it's chulin. Meso nignav enuchai bechriyus. If the animal dies, you don't have to make any kind of personal liability for the animal. So, but obviously what you are obligated to do is pay its value because that's what you committed to. You commit yourself to the value. Ah. So you see now, that the Sefer of the Braisa is talking about the word demei, and so that means that the Reisha is not talking about the case of demei. And if we did not add the word demei, so then we cannot give the answer that we proposed moments earlier, where according to Rav Chiya Bar Rav, the Braisa is talking about a case where he added the word demei. Okay. And all this becomes a problem, the Gemara resolves. Reisha v'sefer tekamer demei. So the Gemara says, no. Really, truth of the matter is that both in the Reisha of the Braisa and the Sefa, you said the word demei. Now, Reisha da'amar yakish ashor ledamav. Now, in the Reisha, what you said is that I want the shore to become kadosh for its value. Now, but on one hand, you said for its value, but on the other hand, you also said the shore, this shore. So that means to say that you want to give the value of this ox to the base of Mikdash, but because you're using this ox, what effectively you're saying is that this ox is going to have Kedushas Damim, as we learned earlier. Whenever you dedicate something to have Kedushas Damim and it's eligible to be brought as a carbon, it itself elevates to the status of becoming a carbon. That's the first part of the Braisa. Now, so, and what about the second half of the Braisa? It's talking about the following. The ox over here, I don't want this ox to be brought as a carbon. What I want is its value. Well, how do I know what its value is? When I sell it, the proceeds of the sale will be hektesh, will belong to the Beis HaMikdash. Oh. That's what we mean in the second half of the Braisa. In both cases now we're adding the word demay. The difference is whether or not I want the current value of this animal to become hektesh, which means now that the animal automatically becomes hektesh, as opposed to the second half of the Braisa, I want the future value of this animal to be hektesh, meaning when I sell it, the proceeds of that sale will be hektesh. Okay, wonderful. All wonderful pshat now in the Braisa. We have added the word demay. It no longer serves as a question against Rav Chiya Barav. The world is in order. Almost. There's one glaring problem, and that is that the way we just explained the Braisa is that when I sell this animal and when I get the gains of that sale then will become kadosh. So what you're trying to do now is create a kedusha in something which has not yet materialized, otherwise known as being makdish davar shelo bala olam. And as a general rule, we know you can't be makdish a davar shelo bala olam. And so, although we have given a wonderful pshat in the Braisa, what we've now done is encountered a problem of how can I be makdish the future sale of this animal? So the Gemara asks exactly this question. So how can you do that? You're not allowed to do that. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Rav, Hamani, Rabbi Meir here. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that's true. That's generally the accepted position. Ein adam makdish davar shelo bala olam. A person cannot create any kind of status in something that is not yet in your possession, and it's only going to be a future. But Rav Meir disagrees, and Rav Meir takes a position that you can. You can make a transaction on something that has not yet materialized. You can try to do the effect now, even though the transaction comes at a future point in time. Okay. Now, Igad Armi now in a slightly different version where we're going to basically come out to the same result. Rami Bar Chama le Rav Chista. Keman ke Rabbi Meir, Damar Adam Makdish Davar Shelo Bala Olam. So are we going like Rav Meir? The response is Amalei ve'ela kaman. Well, who else do you think we're going like? Okay, and in typical Jewish fashion, the question is resolved with, of course, what else were you thinking? Okay, now ve'ikid amastin la'ahab. Okay, and here's what some people do. What some people do is take basically the same, a similar discussion with the same conclusion. And that conclusion is going to be, we're holding like Rav Meir, even though that's not the accepted viewpoint, but we're going to take Rameer's viewpoint in order to answer the question. So the truth of the matter is we're now going to take an entirely different path. We're going to go a whole new route, but where we're going to end up is the same place, where the Gemara is going to say we're subscribing to the opinion of Rami Meir. Okay, now the Bryce over here deals with the following scenario. Amaskir Bais Chavero, somebody who is owning a house and renting it out to somebody else. Venis Naga. And the house now has saras. Avapisha chalto kohen. And now even though the kohen looked at the house and rendered it to be a base hamanuga. So omer la hereshachan lefanecha. So basically what the owner says to the tenant is as follows. Look, I know you saw the house, and I know that in the listing I didn't include an important detail, which is that it had saras. And I understand that that's an important detail. And by the way, there's a really interesting machlokus whether or not a house of tsaras is asur b'hanah, mutar b'hanah. Oddly enough, the Gemara does not even raise this as an issue, but the Rishonim do raise that as an issue. You can see the Bam Tosfos for a discussion on that. But in the meantime, however, can the tenant basically say to the owner, that's ridiculous, meaning I'm not paying you rent on a house that has tsaras. So, harei shechal fanecha. So the halacha is that you could simply say to him, look, the house is here? Yeah. Every physical property of it checked out the way we discussed? Yeah. Okay. So here's the house. And haresha chalafanecha, meaning that there is no physical change in the house. And so in terms of the damages that's done, there are no physical damages that's done. There are halachic impediments that will disallow you from going into the house. But okay. But in other words, but the house is here. And so, as far as I'm concerned, the rental's still on. However, nitetzo chayv lamilo bias. Now, let's say that at this point in time, the house was already demolished. at certain points in the tsaras of a house, so the house is going to be demolished. So the renter comes along, looks to spend his vacation in this wonderful house, and as he gets there, notices now that the house has been demolished because of tsaras. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of an issue. And so now, and what is going to be the landlord's obligation? Chayev. Chayev lami lo bayis. So what the owner has to do now is the owner is going to have to procure for him another house equivalent in value and in accommodations. And that is the halacha if, in fact, the house has been demolished. Really interesting Rashi. On the bottom of the Amud, Nitzitzu, Kohen Chayev, I'm sorry, the Nitzu Kohen, Chayev Maskel Lamid Bayis Acher Lesochem. It becomes now the obligation of the landlord to give another house. Why? The Mishum Mazlei de Maskir Hu. Shenechshan ala gezel ala tsar sa'ayin. Because why is it now that the house is now been demolished? So Rashi over here writes, it is the owner's fault, it's the landlord's fault, it's his mazel that has caused this to happen. Rashi over here is taking us back just a couple days ago in the Daf, where we talked about the various causes of tsaras. Rashi over here, interestingly, gives two examples, gezel and tsar sa'ayin. Theft and being cheap. Okay, why those two in this particular case? Why not Lashon Hara? Okay, one could wonder. But still, the point is, however, Rashi says very clearly that we assume that at the point now where the house goes into literal disrepair, meaning not figurative, not halachic, but literal disrepair, so now we assume that this is going to be based on the actions of the owner. And so that as a result of that, now the owner is the one who is going to be responsible to pick up any of the financial loss, meaning that he has got to give the renter a new house of equivalent value. Okay. Now, so far so good. So the first two points of the Braisa are pretty clear. If the only issue is a halachic issue, so obviously the renter is going to be unhappy, but Haresha Chalafanecha. Here it is. Here's the house. If, on the other hand, the house actually has been demolished, so now the landlord is responsible to make good on providing him equivalent accommodations. Here's where the discussion gets a little tricky. Higdisho, now if he is makdish, hadarbo malas char lehekdesh. So the one who lives in it is going to take the rental, the actual money for rental, and provide it and give it to hekdesh. Okay. That part's really tricky. It's a little bit clear. It's a little bit unclear who exactly was makdish and what was being mukdash. So hikdisho hadarba hechimasi makdish. So at this point in time right now, the Gemara is thinking: first of all, who's the makdish? Who sanctified it? Who consecrated it? So right now, the Gemara thinks, well, maybe it is the renter. The Gemara says that can't possibly be. So ishki akdish beso kodesh amarachmana ma beso birushuso af kol birushuso. Rule number one with being makdish something: you have to be the owner. You have to be the owner, and you have to have current control of the item. Both of those are necessary in order to be makdish anything. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Hekdish is taking something from your domain, from your property, and moving it over into the base of Mikdash's property. Well, if you don't own it, so then obviously that's an impediment. And even if you own it, but you're not in curling control of it, right? Let's say somebody currently stole it from you. So you may own it, and you are still considered the owner before Yeush, but you don't have, it's eno berushuso. It's not currently on your possession. In any event, so there's no way we could be talking about the renter. The renter doesn't own the home. He can't be makdish it. So that's clearly out of the question. So hikdishu maskir. So the Gemara says, okay. So we'll suggest pshat in the braisa is that the landlord was the one who rented it. The landlord was the one who was makdish it. He consecrated it. So the Gemara says, hechidarbe. So b'milakai. So the Gemara says, I got a lot of questions. Number one, if the maskir was makdish the house, that means the house belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. Usage of that house now would represent an isser of me'ila. There is no way the Braisa would just simply allow the renter to come in and say, oh, okay, great. I'll come in. Let me come in. Let me make usage of the house. We're all good, right? Of course not right. Meaning it's a violation of me'ila, misappropriation from the Beis HaMikdash, when I make usage of something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So that's question number one. That already stops the discussion pretty short in its tracks. However, there's another question. Visu malas chala hekdesh. Now, in the Brice, it says that what you're going to do is you're going to take the schar, you're going to take the actual rental money, and give it to the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says, what? Kevin de Malba nafik leis schar lechulin. Now, as we're going to see, we're approaching Maseches Me'ilah. It's coming up a little bit of time from now. We have coming up next Temura, and then afterwards Croesus. And okay, but it's coming up. And in Maseches Me'ilah, we're basically going to see this time and again, and that is the idea that when being moel behekdesh, misappropriating something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, is an iser, and there's a requirement to make restitution when, in fact, you violate Me'ilah, but the item itself, once it's ma'ald, so then it is yotze l'chulin. It basically becomes now chulin, right? Rashi over here brings in the general rule, ein Me'ilah acher Me'ilah. Now, there are exceptions to that rule, and we'll talk about it later, but when you're moel behekdesh, once you misappropriate, so that item now leaves the property of Hekdesh, and that's it. So over here, I'm taking the Hekdesh proceeds and sending it to the Beis HaMikdash. What Hekdesh proceeds? Once the person lives in the house, it's now Yotze L'chulin. There is no Hekdesh proceeds. So the Amar, I'm sorry. So Beinafik Sachal L'chulin. So the Amar. So finally, the Gemara says, okay, we have to say a pshat in the Braisa. The Braisa obviously is trying to make a point, and right now, we don't yet understand the point. The Gemara says we will in just a moment. L'chishyavo scharo yikdash. Finally now, we're going to give a case in the Braisa where all this now makes sense. What the landlord is saying now is the following. Here's what I'm going to consecrate. I'm not consecrating the house currently, because if I do, then of course nobody can live there, and there's nothing to talk about. What I'm going to do is as follows. I'm committing that right now this house is regular house, it's chulin, and I'm renting it out, and when he finally does pay me the rent at the end of the month, that first month's rent, I just gave a little bit embellishment, just for dramatic effect. The first month's rent is going to go to the Beis HaMikdash, meaning I'm going to be makdish that first month's rent when it comes to me. Oh, okay, fine. Now everything's clear. The house is not currently hekdesh. Nobody was mol behekdesh. And then when the Braisa says that money is in fact going to be given to Hekdesh, it's because the money is in fact Hekdesh. Now again, everything's wonderful with one outstanding point, which is how can I be makdish something that's not yet in my possession? And now here we are. V'ha'ena da makdish avishal ba'la olam amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav Hamani Rebbe Merhi damar da makdish avishal ba'la olam. So the Gemara says, okay, and the only way we can entertain such a pshat in the Braisa is only by saying that it's going like Rabbi Meir. Igad Amri Amalei Rav Chista. Amalei Rav Papa Labai V'Amalei Rav Mari Baruch Amalei Rav Chista Keman K'Rav Meir. D'Amad Adam Maktish Efer Shalva L'Olam. In this pshat that you just said in the Braisa, are we going like Rabbi Meir? So Amalei V'Ela Keman. So he says, well, who else do you think we're going like? Yes, we're going like Rabbi Meir.
Baruch Atan Amalchum Shekom Lebron. Anytime you make a donation, aren't you doing the same thing?
When you make a donation, so what you're doing is that you are being makdish the money in your hand that you're going to give to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. The next mission, we're on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. We are now going to be talking about the power the Beis Din has in order to make sure that you pay your obligations. Okay, bill collection. Okay, right? It's not an old topic. It's, yes, it's an old topic, but just nothing much has changed in the last 1800 years, right? It's the same basic issue. What kind of means can be used in order to make sure that you pay your debts? And so, chayve erechin mimashkenosam. So the Mishnah starts off with a nice, simple statement. It's a simple statement, however, but the ramifications are obviously really, really rough. And that is that if a person has an erech obligation and it's outstanding. Now, I think it's fair to ask, when does it become an outstanding obligation? Meaning, by nedarim, we have a general rule that by neder, it's gimel regalim. Right? The first sugya in Rosh Hashanah. Not the first sugya, but one of the first sugyas in Rosh Hashanah spends a good amount of time talking about at what point in time are you over the Isra of Balti Acher as it relates to a neder. Over here, it's Erechin. So I'm not really sure if it qualifies, if it falls under the same umbrella of Gimel Regalim, but whatever the case is. So once an outstanding debt, So at that point in time, Beis Din is memashkin. What does the word memashkin mean? They come over and they take collateral. And it's really simple. Knock on the door. Hi, you owe. You vote for some time now. Okay, we'll take the couch. And basically what they'll do is they'll take a mashkin against you. They'll take some sort of collateral against you. And that will certainly incentivize you to pay. Right? You have nowhere to sit until you pay your erech pledge. Okay. Now, if you owe a carbon chatos or a carbon asham, and you've delayed, and now it's past due, so here the Beis Hamikdash will not be memashkin; they will not come and take any type of collateral against you. Why not? So, as we'll see, it's pretty clear. The reason why is because when it comes to carbon chatos, carbon asham, you're going to be motivated. The only reason why Beis Din is going to come and start taking collateral from you is because you're not highly motivated, right? We all seemingly are pretty attached to our money. We all have a difficult time parting with our money, even though we owe the money. And so therefore, we need a little bit of external pressure in order to get us to pay. However, if there already is an internal pressure to get us to do it, so then the Chachamim don't go through this process of memashkin. And so that means when it comes to a chatos or karmanola, sorry, I'll speak more carefully. When it comes to a carbon chatos or a carbon asham, so there, if you don't bring it, you lack kapara. Now, kapara is motivating, right? If a person knows that with this carbon chatos and with this carbon asham, he will receive a kapara, so he'll be motivated to bring it on his own. No need for Beis Din to be mamashkin. However, if it's a carbon that does not have kapara, so then you can imagine, now there needs to be a little bit of external pressure. Chai ve'olos v'shalamim mamashkin asam. So, afa pishein miskaper lo ashis rats. I'm sorry, that's the next point of the Mishnah. We'll get to it in just a moment. So, when it comes to carbon olor shlamin, because these carbonas are not there to provide kapara, so therefore, Beis Din now has to provide a little bit of external pressure. Okay, collateral. Rashi over here points out, now, you know, when it comes to the carbon olor, it does provide a little bit of kapara, right? The Rashi in the Mishnah, the first Rashi in the Mishnah. Olos v'shamim afa gav. Now, in the Rashi, we have the word shlamin, but can edit it to olor. Ola mechaperes aasei. So we know that if a person was negligent on fulfilling a mitzvah essay, so even though there's no formal kapara, but there's an informal kapara of bringing a carbon ola, that's all true, Rashi says. Hovalav chovi hi alaha, lo chashiv le kapara. Va'asi l'shui, hilkach memashkin asan. So Rashi points out, however, all that's true, but it's not an obligation. It's a recommendation, right? In other words, if for whatever reason you didn't fulfill a mitzvah essay, and you want to be provided some form of kapara, okay, so bring a carbon ola. But it's not obligatory to do so. And so therefore, here you need a little bit of external pressure. Beis Din's going to come and take a little bit of your items in order to pressure you to do so. If it's not obligatory, then...
How can they force it?
No, because you, in other words, it's still a neder, meaning because you committed. We're talking about a person who committed to bring a carbon ola. Mm-hmm. So once it's a neder, so now Beis Din is going to come and say, look, you made a neder, you got to make good on your neder. And if you say, just come back in a month or come back in 2 months, so now Beis Din is going to apply that external pressure. The Afa Pishayim is Kapar Lashi Yisratza, Shenemar Lirutsono. Now, the Mishnah points out we have a bit of a problem. In that, we are now being told to bring a carbon. And not only being told, it's actually worse than that. It's a bit of coercion. Now, you're not twisting my arm, right? You're not twisting my arm, but you're basically twisting my arm in order to bring a carbon. And so I'll be there in the Beis Hamikdash, and if you want me to smile, even smile. But this is not really willing, is it? And we know that when it comes to a carbon has to be brought, with the person's will. The person has to want to bring a carbon. And how exactly does this work? So the Gemara says, the Afa Pishem is Kapar Lo Ashi Yisratza Shenemar Lirtzono, Kofano So Ashi Yomer Rotzani. So the Mishnah over here, in a form of both brilliance and simplicity, says, okay, no problem at all. So what you're going to do is you're going to just simply keep forcing and twisting his arm until he says, I want to bring it. Right? In other words, he comes to the Beis Hamikdash, he's like, I'm bringing it, but I don't really want to. That's not the right attitude. Let's a little attitude adjustment. And so the Kohanim over there, so they apply a little more pressure. Okay, do you want to bring it? And so eventually what they get out of him is, yeah, I want to bring it. Okay, now. V'chein ata omer b'gitei nashim kofen osashi omer rotzani. And the Gemara says if a person is recalcitrant and does not want to give a get to his wife, so again, so a similar methodology in which a little bit of external pressure is going to be applied, and with that external pressure, so he'll basically get to the point where he'll say, yeah, I'd love to give my wife a get. I don't know what I was thinking. Clearly, I want to do so. And so the Mishnah over here, this is it. This is the Mishnah that describes the scenario in which pressure could be applied to a person so that when he doesn't want to do it, so with a little bit of pressure, so then we'll get out of him that he wants to do it. A forced confession, right? And does that have any value? Now, clearly the answer is yes. Clearly. Meaning the Mishnah says so. So clearly the answer is yes. The Rambam explains it, and I would say it's a popular Rambam, right? I'm sure you've heard it before. But based on this Mishnah, the Rambam writes that what you see over here is as follows. That generally speaking, when it comes to people and they're interested in doing mitzvos, a person's really interested in doing mitzvos. Meaning if you go to the core of a person really wants to do the right thing. It just happens to be that life, yetzahara, right? There are so many things that are preventing us from doing the right thing. But the truth of the matter is that the core of a human being is that we want to do good and we want to do what's right. And so, even though there is a little bit of coercion applied over here, and coercion for the person to say, yes, I want to do it, like how can that possibly be considered a willing act? So the Rambam says it's very simple. Because all the coercion does is it basically just strips away the outer layers, all those impediments that preventing him from doing so, and getting him to his core, to the real root of what he wants to do, which is he wants to do the right thing. If it means bringing a carbon, yes. If it means giving a get, again, the answer is going to be yes. Amar Rav Papa, the Gemara starts off the discussion. Now, this rule of the Mishnah that for carbon chatos, we don't take collateral. And for carbon ola, we do take collateral. So it's not an absolute, like many of the halachas that we find, they're not absolute halachas, meaning that there are exceptions to the halachas. Over here, if you understand the halacha, then you'll understand the exceptions. So for example, chayved chatos memashkenoso bechatos nazir. So I'll give an example where it's a karmen chatos, but it's not there for kapara, and so therefore, you are, based in, it's going to take collateral against you in order so that you'll bring it. Like for example, chatos of a nazir. So let's say, for example, the chatos of the nazir. Now, we know that a nazir, at the conclusion of his nazirus, is allowed to get a haircut, go to a cemetery, drink wine. And so, even though the Torah mandates that he brings three karbanos at the end of his tahara process, in which... not tahara process. He's not tamei. At the end of his nazirus process, a karban chatas ola and a shlamim. So as we've just learned together right now, if he shaves his head over one of these karbanos, if the blood is sprinkled for him on one of these karbanos, so now his nazirus comes to an end. Now of course the mitzvah is to bring all three karbanos, but in terms of the base minimum of what he needs to do, just one carbon would be sufficient in order for him to fulfill this obligation. So you see over here that the chatas of the nazir is not for the purpose of kapara. So as such, one would not be highly motivated to bring the carbon chatas. Therefore, you would take a mashkon in order for such a carbon chatas. That's an example of a carbon chatas where you do take a mashkon. Conversely, what about an ola? The Gemara goes the other way. Chayve olo, same amashkenoso. So where is an ola where we won't take a mashkon because there is already a internal drive to bring such a carbon ola. So but olos yoledes. So the Gemara suggests, well, maybe it's the carbon ola of a woman who's given birth. A woman who's given birth is obligated to give at the conclusion of her yemei tuma and yemei tahara, 40 days for a boy, 80 days after a girl. So she is obligated to bring a pair of karbanos, a chatas and an ola. So the Gemara says, ba'olas yoledes, my niu, da'akta mekra. So the Gemara says, now you'll notice that in the Torah, so the karban ola comes before the karban chatas. So that means that seemingly, in order for her to bring a karban chatas, she has to bring a karban ola. Well, she wants the kapara, She wants to bring her carbon chatas. She can only bring her carbon chatas if she brings her carbon ola. So therefore, she's internally motivated to bring her carbon ola. And so therefore, we don't have to be mamashkein. The Gemara says, that's all well and good. That would have been a wonderful argument. It just happens to be, we got one halacha wrong. So the Gemara says, look, even though when the Torah presents the ola and the chatas of a yoledes, and even though the Torah puts the ola in front of the chatas, that's not the proper order. The proper order is first the chatas, then the ola. Oh, so now that's the proper order. So once the chatas is brought, so now she's not going to be so motivated to bring a carbon ola because it's not providing the kapara. The chatas is providing the kapara. And so basically now what we have is a situation where you have an ola where there is not an internal drive for her to bring the ola. So this is not the good example of the ola where you don't have to be memashkein. So the Gemara says, okay, I'll give you another one. Ela ba'ola mitzara. So the ola of a mitzara, as we've discussed already numerous times, here in our mesechta, when a mitzara concludes his sarah, so as part of the purification process, he brings on the eighth day three karbanas, an ola, an asham, and a chatas. So the Gemara says that the ola of a mitzara, so there, the motivation will be high. How do I know that? The Tanya Rabbi Shmuel ben Osho Rabbi Yehuda ben Baruch Omer, Keshem shechatasov v'ashamo ikavto, kach olaso, ikavto. In terms of what's being ma'akev, what's holding back our mitzora from being fully reinstated and fully rehabilitated, so he needs to bring all three karbanos. So it's not just the chatas, it's not just the asham, it's the ola as well. So therefore the ola is going to be internally motivated. He will be internally motivated to bring the carbon ola of his mitzora. And so therefore there you don't have to take a mashkan. Okay. And so basically the idea is very straightforward, is that as long as the chatas that is providing kapara, no mashkan is needed. If you have, and there is, the Gemara cited an example of a chatas that is not there to provide kapara, so then we're going to need to give him a little external influence if we see that he is not internally driven to do so. Similarly, conversely, we say the same thing by an ola. Generally speaking, an ola is not to provide kapara. And so therefore, if we find the person after having committed himself to bring an ola is simply uninspired and is not moving that fast, so we can provide some outside coercion. Aye, but there is an ola, the ola of a carbon asham, where there is an internal drive to bring it because he does not receive the kapara until he brings the carbon ola of its saras. Okay, so there no mashko needs to be taken. Afa pishe miskaper ad lo ad shi yisratze. We are now towards the end of the amud. Tan rabbanan yakriv oso. So Yakriv Oso, that is Balashan Hifil. The way the Torah is grammatically written, it's Yakriv, we will get him to offer. Now how are we going to get him to offer? With a little bit of pressure. Okay. Yachol Baal Karcho. Now, does that mean that he's going to offer it against his will? No, Tam Lam alert, so no. No, the Torah says where he has to do so willingly. So, how do I take these two drushas and put them side by side? On one hand, one drasha says coercion. On the other hand, he has to do so willingly. Now, we already know the answer. We already saw the answer in the Mishnah. But the Brisa is laying it out. Ha-ketzad, kofen osachi omarotzani. So the solution is very simple. So what you're going to do is you're going to coerce until the point where he gets to the point where not only does he bring it, but on top of that, he also says, I want to bring it. So with that in mind, good. Now he's brought it, and now he said he wants to bring it as well. Amr Shmuel, Ola Tzricha Dash, and Amr Lir Tzono. So Shmuel is of the opinion that an Ola requires intent, because the Pasuk says Lir Tzono, Maika Mashmalan Tanina. Afa Pishay Miskaper Lo Ashi Yitzratze, Shenamr Lir Tzono. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. We just quoted the Drasha. The Drasha we just quoted is from the first Perek of Vayikra. The first Perek of Vayikra is talking about a Karban Ola. Of course you need Ratzon. Meaning, what is Shmuel introducing to us that we didn't know already? Latzricha Deparish Le Chavrei. So the Gemara says, well, we're talking about a case where somebody sponsored your carbon. You take a look at the second to last Rashi, the Afish Lechavrei, Shahaya Ze Chayv Ola, Uva Chaver, Uvi Yifrisho Mishalo, Lechaper Asosho Ze. So somebody is nice enough, kind enough to sponsor your carbon. Now, the Karmer Shmuel, the Be'inashi Yodio Es HaMizkaper. And so now, what you have to do is you have to tell the person who's receiving Kapara, I am sponsoring a carbon for you, and let him know that his carbon is being sponsored. The Gemara is not going to discuss it, but the Gemara is going to discuss a couple of other aspects. So I might have thought that this halacha of das and ratzon is only when you bring your own carbon. But if the carbon is bringing by somebody else, so then maybe not. And the Gemara explains the reason why you need to inform the person who's receiving the kapara is for the following reason. People are like this, right? I know plenty of people are like this. And that is that I'd rather do the mitzvah with my money rather than have somebody pay for my mitzvos. And so it's my carbon responsibility. It's my obligation. I know that there is there's an option of sponsorship, but I'd rather do it myself. Okay, right? So it seems that way. Meisvei. The Gemara challenge is based on Brisa Chatzos Hashemosh Shel Ploni Alai. The Brisa here discusses a person sponsoring a Chatzos of or an Asham of somebody else upon himself. So Ladas Yatzos Shel Ladas Lo Yatzos. So if it's Ladas, meaning if the person was informed that a carbon is being brought on his behalf, and I'll add Ben because I think it's correct, and he also has to acquiesce. So then fine, but if he's not informed, so then it doesn't work. But if I'm sponsoring somebody's carbon ola or somebody's carbon shlamim, so then whether I inform him or whether I do not inform him, the carbon works. And this obviously goes against the position of Shmuel, because Shmuel's of the position that you have to inform him even by carbon ola. So I'm lecha Shmuel ki tanya hi b'shas kapara. So the irtzei b'shas afrasha. So the Gemara says, well, let's break it down to two different points. The point where you set aside the carbon, the point where you're actually offering the carbon. As far as the Brisa is concerned, the Brisa was talking about Shas Kapara, when the carbon is actually being offered. So the irtze, so the Bishas Afrasha, where the truth of the matter is that you informed him about the carbon when you set it aside. Ki kamina ana, Shmuel says, as far as what I was saying, is bishas afrasha. Meaning, Shmuel is basically saying like this, when it comes to nola and shlamim, so what you have to do is you have to inform the person as you're setting aside, I'm setting aside a carbon for you. And he has to be informed, and again, presumably, he has to also acquiesce at that point in time. From this point going forward, meaning eventually what's going to happen is that the animal will be brought as a carbon in the base of Mikdash. And when it's actually being offered, the shas kapara, so there, the owner does not need to be informed. So, and so Shmuel saying that the Brisa was talking about the Shas Kapara, I was talking about the Shas Afrasha. Upligi de'ula, now the Gemara says, now as far as this distinction goes, Ula disagrees with Shmuel. The Amar Ula, the Gemara quotes the opinion of Ula, Lo chilka ben chatas ola ela, shechata tzricha das b'shas afrasha, va'ola ein tzricha das b'shas afrasha. So Ula basically is the mirror opposite of Shmuel. Ula says that there's a difference between Chatas and Ola, and that would be at the time where you set it aside. For the Chatas, you have to let the owner know that I'm sponsoring his carbon. For an Ola, you don't. At the time of Kapara, so there has to be information given to the owner, the miskaper, the one who's receiving kapara, that this carbon is being brought on his behalf. So that's the opinion of Ula, which is obviously the opposite of Shmuel.
Isn't he need to be present?
Right, it goes back to Ben's point, meaning being present, doing the mitzvah smicha. Right. And I maybe can make the argument. Right now I'm just thinking out loud that smicha is not ma'akev. Hard to imagine, but okay. Meisvei. Unlikely. In other words, we're talking about sponsoring somebody else's carbon. It's providing a kapar for that, for the person.
Discharge his responsibility.
Right. Unlikely. We're talking about a carbon chatas. The carbon chatas is not voluntary. It's coming as a result of an obligation. You're obligated to bring carbon chatas. Okay. Meisvei, the Gemara challenges chatasov hashamo olaso shlamav shalploni alai. So the Gemara quotes a Brisa. The Brisa says that when it comes to a chazos, or an asham, or an ola, or a shlamim, and you are sponsoring it, ladas yatza shalol ladas lo yatza. So if it is ledas. If you inform, good. If you don't inform, no good. Now Shmuel mukilah b'shas afrasha. Now as far as Shmuel is concerned, right. In other words, we're talking about at the time when you set it aside. At the time when you set it aside, according to Shmuel, that's the time when you have to inform. And ula mukilah b'shas kapara. And according to ula, it was just simply said, the Bryce is talking about at the time of kapara, meaning according to ula, that's the time where the miskaper has to be informed that a carbon is being burned as bath. Amara papa masisa nadad lo kasha. Habishas kapara habishas afrasha. So as far as the Bryces are concerned, there is no stira, meaning what basically the Gemara, what Rav Papa is pointing out is that we're asking questions on Ula and on Shmuel. The truth of the matter is that the Bryces don't agree. Some Bryces are of the opinion that you always have to inform the miskaper. Another Bryce says that for chatas you do, for nola you don't. So again, the distinction can be made very simply. One's talking about shas kapara and the other one's talking about shas afrasha. V'amarai nami lo kasha, Shmuel muki kamaisa b'shas kapara b'sreis b'shas afrasha ule mukala ibcha. So, and as far as the Amoraim are concerned, so once again, the Amoraim will handle it the way we just suggested. According to Shmuel, we're talking about shas afrasha. According to Ula, we're talking about shas kapara. Now, Amoraim vade plige. So now, as far as the Amoraim are concerned, so they're arguing. To which the Gemara says, I think we knew that, pshita. So ma detem amai b'shas afrasha dekamer Shmuel, af b'shas afrasha. V'af agav da'ach kamaisa tiyufta kamashmalan. The Gemara says, well, we could have given a pshat in Shmuel. It would have been very difficult in Mitzvah Gemara. That when Shmuel says that you, that when he says shas hafrasha, he means even shas hafrasha. There is no obligation to let him know. And even though the Brisa would be going against Shmuel under those circumstances, we could have suggested such a pshat in Shmuel. The Gemara wanted to clarify, we are not going to suggest such a pshat in Shmuel. Meaning Shmuel and Ula argue with one another. There is no getting around that. Okay. V'chem b'gidei nashin kofin. The Gemara adds one more halacha in terms of gidei nashin, meaning, and this idea of kofin aso ashim arotzani, that basically coercion can be done until he gets to the point where he says, yes, I'd love to do it. Mm-hmm. And it works by karbanos, and it works by gidei nashim. So the Gemara over here adds a important point. Amar sheshet haiman damasa moda agita. So modei moda. If a person says the following before the coercion begins, so he basically serves notice. And the serving of notice says that basically I'm going to be giving the get under duress. And by serving notice, he basically says, look, from this point going forward, anything I say, I'm not saying with sound mind and with real agreement. And so this serving of notice is going to be a manner in which he is going to basically undo the giving of the get. Now, even though we just learned together in the Mishnah that coercion works and you are allowed to coerce until he says, I want to do so, but by him serving notice beforehand, so that is a way of undoing even a coerced get. Now, Pshita, the Gemara says, now, isn't that obvious? That statement to the Gemara is a little curious because I'm not sure how obvious it is. Meaning, if you can coerce admission and agreement, so then one could have argued that you can even do that against the person who served notice. But anyway, Pshita, the Gemara feels that it's obvious. So let's richa dasu v'irtse. So the Gemara says, well, what happened was is that we forced him to do so, and the and he basically became agreeable, and so mahu detema. Betule batle, one could make the argument that once he becomes agreeable and we see that he's in full agreement, so maybe what we can basically say is that it undoes his moda that he issued originally. Kamash Malan, the imkain listening achi yitain. My achi yomer, admavatale la moda. So what we need from him is the following. We need from him a verbal designation that even though he served notice prior to the proceedings, what he needs to do is he needs to undo that moda. That moda was a verbal declaration that he's serving notice. So what he needs to do is he needs to undo that with a declarative statement of, I'm undoing my serving notice. And then and only then can we proceed with the get proceedings. There is a lot of discussion to be had after the Hadron Lachamar Mishkali, sorry. That is the end of the fifth parak of the Masechta. And tomorrow morning, we're going to begin the sixth parak. There is a lot of discussion about a coerced get. As you could see, we just learned together that a coerced get is going to be good unless the owner serves notice. This is just but the beginning of a discussion. The discussion goes on. We did not even scratch the surface of the topic. There are other Gemaras out there that indicate that a fourth get is not going to be a good get, despite the fact that we just learned that it is a good get. And a series of Rishonim deal with how to resolve the two Gemaras one against the other, and various ways of explaining under what circumstances a coerced get would work and under what circumstances would a coerced get not work. So truth of the matter is that right now we don't even have enough information to have an intelligent discussion on the matter. I say all this just as by way of properly warning anybody. First of all, never take the law into your own hands. But even if you do take the law into your own hands, we don't even fully know the law yet. Meaning at this point in time, we just have one piece in the puzzle of under what circumstances would a coerced get work. So we are still incomplete in our knowledge of under what circumstances would a coerced get work.